Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to the McCarthy Project live from Minnesota, where we have been attacking life and sport since 2001.
Good morning from Minneapolis, Minnesota. This is Stephen McCarthy, your host, where we have been attacking life and sport since 2001. And today we will be talking about the world of sports nutrition. And very much looking forward to today. We have two guests that I've done taped interviews with. Ricky Keene, who is a registered dietitian and a certified sports dietitian. And then I also will have Atricia O'Hara, who is a very accomplished athlete, a trainer, triathlete, and runner, and trains some of the most elite clients in the world today in France and then also in New York City. So she has a very unique perspective on the world of nutrition. So what are we going to accomplish today? We are going to look at the world from a philosophical standpoint. As you'll hear from the interviews with Ricky, there is another level of information. There's first of all a philosophical, you know, what are the basics, and then there is a very much a scientific approach. And so we're going to be addressing the philosophical side and questioning the current status of new sports nutrition. So with that, we are going to go to a quick break with Thistle, as far as I am ready, just to kind of get the set the tone right. Look forward to kind of continuing our discussion on sports nutrition.
They thought they was going to kill me with all their hate. Let them hoes blow, baby. You can hate me all you want to, cuz it's only going to make me stronger.
I don't think they hear me, dog.
You can't stop this, dog. You can't stop this.
It's
God's plan. And I'm ready.
I'm ready. I'm ready.
I'm free now.
I'm ready.
I got my mind right.
I'm ready.
Out on your boy, and they left me for dead.
Oh, blood in my eyes, thorns on my head. Only thing that I can hear is what my savior say. While I'm in my own blood, and I can't feel my legs. But I'ma live, I'ma live. I will not die. Got up off the ground, and I wiped that blood up out my eyes. Got my mind right, got my grind right. Stood up now, it's time to rise. Been resurrected, resurrected. I am alive. Blood drip, headed for war. Fire in my eyes. Ready for war, no turning back. I got my dog with me, 300 of us. Young Leonidas, take on the whole city. We don't retreat, we do not quit. We are not the same to live and die for the truth. Let's be plain, this is why I came. And if I weren't you, this dog, I'd probably hate me too. But the power that I come in is too big for you. To stop, so stop it for me, for you go too far. My mind right, the time right, boy, and I'm ready for war.
Head to the sky, my war goes on.
Back. This is Stephen McCarthy of the McCarthy Project, and we are going to be looking at the world of sports nutrition today. And like I mentioned in our intro, we have Ricky Keene of FRS, and then also Trish O'Hara. Ricky is a certified sports dietitian and a registered dietitian. I believe there's two different certifications there. And then Trish O'Hara, like I mentioned in her intro, she works with some of the elite in the world of training. She's an accomplished athlete on herself, and she has really been involved in the sports community for a very, very long time. So before we go into those interviews will be taped. I did tape them earlier in the week, So just to kind of set some groundwork before we move into Tricia, today's look at the world of nutrition is going to be philosophical. And I think I heard it best by a podcast that I listened to, that it is most important to understand the end game and then reverse engineer the solution. Because if you are coming at it from trying to make little small adjustments along the way, you could end up taking a wrong path, and then you end up in the wrong path. So you end up going down a road, making a decision over to that fork in the road and that fork in the road. You might not end up in the truth. You end up way away from the truth. The trick that we want to get to is find out what basic pieces to the puzzle, what are truths in the world of sports nutrition. Secondly, in finding those truths, we have to question what we're given as truth. And in this world today, I think there's so much information that our society is flooded with as far as related to diet. Don't eat trans fat. Don't do this. Don't do that. No cholesterol. No this. No that. Eat this. Do that. Okay, now I got food on both sides saying do this, do that. And I think the whole situation gets really, really confused. And that is exactly what I'm talking about, is that instead of staying in a position of understanding what principles that we're going to run by, we're busy going over to this fad or going over to that diet or going over to this diet. I have another friend of mine that has completed a year-long study of 100 different diets. And there literally are so many different ways to look at this. What I would like to find is a way that philosophically what's happening at the higher levels of performance. And talking to Cal Dietz at the University of Minnesota, everything's done at a cellular level. What happens at the cellular level? Now, does that mean we all need to be scientists? No, I don't believe so. But we have to take into account that just because everybody else is doing it, or just because it's not being talked about, or maybe the studies weren't done by somebody in your local area, they were done in another country, as long as the studies are held to be at a scientific standard, you can use them. And it doesn't mean they're bad, and that doesn't mean that they can't be used. So we're going to be proposing some ideas that are pretty, I'll just say extraordinary. They're not extraordinary. They're simply different than what most people are thinking. And so with that said, what is the end game? You know, what are the things that we're looking to accomplish by nutrition? And I think the end game always is elite performance. If we are in the sports world, whether we want Johnny just to play at a high level at the house league, or we want him to play and be an All-American at high school, play college, play pros, elite performance at their level is what they're looking for. Now, that may be different for a lot of different people, but we want them to do their best, whether if it's cheering, you know, on the bench, and they only play a little bit, or they're playing a lot, it doesn't make a difference. Everything is about elite performance for them at their position. Secondly, we want to promote recovery with nutrition. I think that's another lost piece to the puzzle, is so many people in the United States are survival of the fittest type of people, or they don't take the time to understand that they need to eat, you know, or they don't have the money, you know, and therefore they are literally going one or two meals a day, and that's as good as they got, you know. And there are so many different pieces to this puzzle, but simply promoting recovery with what you're doing is of the utmost importance. Lance Armstrong, I remember listening to an interview one time, and he was asked, what is it that he did that was so much better than everybody else? Now I realize that he's been caught for doing drugs, and but you have to realize that everybody at that time was doing drugs, so he wasn't doing anything different than anybody else. But he did feel that the one piece of his puzzle was that he didn't know how to recover. Now, after thinking about that, is that the best example? No. But again, we have done these types of ideas in a local swim team that we work with, and the coach has always been about training for recovery.
what do we do that helps promote recovery so that they can do the next workout? And the same thing holds for sports nutrition. So the other piece of the puzzle is that how do we decrease injuries, or how do we decrease allergies, or, I mean, there's so much disease on the rise, and we're going to get into it a little bit about how to do that, but there's so many different allergies and diseases and rare this, rare that. Why is all this coming up? We have to somehow enable our young people to live a life, a quality life. And one of the major sources of it is nutrition, you know, what they're putting in their body. There's some other environmental things, but, I mean, we'll get into that a little bit later too. But in the end, it's about what you put in your body today. Not today, but on this show. So that'll kind of promote the end game. The end game is elite performance, promoting recovery, and decreasing disease or breakdown of the of your body at a cellular level. And so these are the things that we're going to be addressing today with, first of all, I think what we'll do is we're going to go over to Trish O'Hara. Trish O'Hara is a, like I mentioned earlier, trained elite, not elite athlete necessarily, the elite meaning the very well off. And she is an elite athlete. She is a one of the top runners. She actually runs stairs, or stair running, I believe they actually call it. And if you go to TrishO'Hara.com, you will see that here's a person that has understood elite performance and performing at risk. She's been involved with the sports community for over 20 years, has a fantastic perspective because she actually lives in France half the time, and then she lives in New York City the other half. So here's my taped interview with her talking about, first of all, the idea and the concept behind elite performance, and is it as scientific as every one of us think it or supposed to be, because we're getting so confused because we're always sent all this information about what do this, do this, do that, don't do this, possible. I mean, it goes too far. So here's my interview with Trish O'Hara on sports nutrition. Good afternoon. This is Stephen McCarthy from the McCarthy Project, and we have been talking about sports nutrition and the area of organic and GMO foods and the importance of nutrition in your life and in your sport. Today I've asked Trish O'Hara, who is a regular guest on our show, who has a very extensive training background, has run in, I was going to say numerous or hundreds, and I should ask for a little bit more clarification, endurance events. And so she has done a lot of work in the area of really figuring out her nutrition. I think she really has, I'm going to say it's unique in today's world, but really it is probably the more common sense approach to race day nutrition. How are you doing today, Trisha?
Hi, how are you doing, Stephen?
Doing very well, doing very well. So we've been discussing nutrition or sports nutrition and the world of finding quality food sources, finding quality hydration and water. But you have, it's kind of funny, through all your experiences, kind of give us an idea of what you feel race day nutrition or nutrition as a whole really kind of like gets down to the brass tack level. What does it get down to?
Honestly, for me personally, Stephen, I try to always eat clean, and what I mean by that is food in their natural states, you know, so not preservatives, foods with lots of fats and oils and stuff like that, whole grains, nuts, dairy, meat, vegetables, fruits. So on race day, really, I don't change it that much. I guess I kind of do, you know, a lot of people have the belief of the carbo load, and you always have the carbo load party the night before. But I feel if you're eating a pretty good diet, you know, throughout the week, throughout the day. And I would say I tend to eat a little bit more carbohydrates, but my carbohydrates tend to be more from low glycemic, not necessarily like pasta. So perhaps I might have a big salad with, you know, lentils and different vegetables, and then throw in some protein as well, whether it be, you know, some grilled chicken or something. I don't tend to be the person to eat the big bowl of pasta and bread the night before a race. I feel like if you're eating a pretty nutritious diet 24/7, you don't need to alter it that much. But that's just me personally. That's what works for me. And I never, you know, as a rule of thumb, you never try something new during the race or before the race, because you never know how it's going to react, how your body's going to react. Actually, I take that back. I did that once at my first half marathon, San Diego half marathon. I think I was using goo at the time, and I don't know if it was vanilla or chocolate or whatever it was, and I completely forgot them on race day. So I get there, and my girlfriend's got all this citrus and, like, I don't know, raspberry and orange and all these citrus flavors. So I'm using them during the race, and I had the worst stomach ache, and I thought I was going to totally throw up. So I didn't really take my own advice, and I paid for it. So definitely always make sure with whatever liquids or whatever fuel you use, food you use, you know, for the race, that it's something you've trained with previously, as well as also what you're eating during the race and the days before. So I'm not sure if that answers your question, but I don't. I don't alter that much.
Well, I think the thing that's, I mean, we all seem to think that the guy that has researched on the internet and sat there and is timing out when he eats his first goo, when he eats his second goo, when he eats his lunch, and that he actually, mm-hmm. with all the thoughts he's put into it, that he's got to perform at a higher level, so I have to do the same thing. And really, there is a more common sense approach, you know, to this idea of race day nutrition.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I think.
Honestly, the way I eat, Stephen, I just think of food as fuel. I have my clients always asking me that. You're so lean. You're so muscular. What do you eat? You know, I always get that. What do you eat? And I'm like, well, okay, if I'm getting up at 4 in the morning and I'm running, you know, for a couple hours before my clients, I've got to eat something, you know, that's going to, you know, give me fuel for a two-hour run, something low glycemic, something that's, you know, easy to digest as well. And so, you know, and then what do I eat afterwards? Well, you know, eat some protein to help with muscle recovery and promote energy, and eat some carbohydrates as well. So it's, you know, I'm not, if I were scientific about it, I would never probably race, because when I was training for Ironman, you know, I said to my coaches, I just said, I don't want one of those, you know, fancy schedules that says, okay, you need to swim 200 meters and then do the IM and all this, you know. It's just like, because I know me, and it's just like, if it's scientific like that, I won't do it, because then for me it's not fun. And the same thing with the diet. If I had to sit there and measure out, okay, this many grams of protein and this many grams of carbohydrates, again, that might work for someone, that doesn't work for me, and I still, you know, perform.
I have two major questions for you. What are your thoughts, or do you use some sort of a caffeine component to your diet and to your training schedule?
You know, it's funny, because there's so much controversy on caffeine, where they say, okay, it's bad for you, it's a dehydrant. Then you read articles where they say caffeine is actually a good boost before a workout. So, honestly, I think it's to the person's personal preference. And for me personally, I don't drink a lot of caffeine, because I'm really naturally high energy. And if I do drink, I don't drink soda or anything, but I might have like a half a cup of coffee in the morning. But if I drink some sort of caffeinated beverage like past 2 in the afternoon, then I have a hard time sleeping at night. So I think the chocolate goo that I do use during races and during training, I think that has some caffeine. But for the most part, I'm not, even though I live in France, I'm not, you know, a big coffee drinker or espresso drinker, where, I mean, those guys that can eat dinner and at midnight have an espresso before they go to bed. For me, it doesn't work. But and so, again, I think I would say maybe a few times when I felt low on energy before a long workout, I would have a little bit of Coke or something. So, again, I think that it's all personal preference. What works for one person doesn't necessarily work for another person. And for me, I just try to eat clean. I drink tons of water, because water actually is a natural energy booster, although people think that sugar and caffeine are. But our body's made up of about 75% water, and you should drink about half your body weight in fluid ounces in water. So a lot of times if you're tired or fatigued or have a headache, it's because your body's dehydrated. But the thing that the people, most people grab first is some sort of sugar or caffeine to lift them up.
Two that I'd like to do before we kind of close down this segment is one is, do you think the diet changes or the race day nutrition changes for younger athletes, maybe that are, let's say, under 17, under 18, something like that?
Well, I think as we get older, we become more knowledgeable. Because if I remember, you know, I grew up playing soccer. Soccer was my big sport for about 15 years, and I played at all the levels and played high school, college, and after, and also track and cross country since I was very young. And I remember before some track meets, we would go to the store, and we would go get a box of ding-dongs and eat that before a track meet. You wouldn't catch me dead eating a box of, not even one, you wouldn't catch me dead eating one ding-dong before like an iron. So I don't know, to answer your question, I think it's just, you know, we aren't educated. Now, it could be different for the youth now, you know, because health and fitness and diet is so much more crazed now. But when I was a kid, ding-dongs were the way.
Well, it's funny you think about it. You're like,
catch me eating a ding-dong now.
Yep, those apple pies that used to be in the gas stations. I mean, those are all the things
fruit apple pies. Yes, I love those too. And, you know, I've been fortunate my whole life that I haven't had a weight problem. But, I mean, I could eat that kind of stuff now, Stephen. I just choose to feel clean. And what I mean by that is putting healthy, nutritious food into my body, you know. And so I just, you know, it's, and I like waking up and feeling high energy and feeling high energy during the day and during my workouts. So to answer your question, I think that, now again, it can be different now because the health and fitness craze is so much more prevalent now. But I don't think, and just even having trained some teenage kids, they don't really focus so much on their diet. So,
I think that's a fair thing because there's so much information out there sometimes. I mean, I've seen we work with a lot of swimmers here in the local area, and it is amazing how people's body types or body composition actually matches a lot of what they do at home as far as eating is concerned. There are a lot of people that are really health conscious that are very lean, you know, and then there are other people that are good athletes but carry a little bit more weight just because they do enjoy fast food and they don't think about it too much, and that adds to their body composition, if you know what I mean. And it really does come down to what you were taught as a young person, you know what I mean, as a parent. Therefore, you're going to pass it on to your kids. And I think one of the biggest things that we can talk about in what you've mentioned is that it doesn't, you just need to put clean food sources or clean food and water into your body. Doesn't mean you need to change how much you're eating, or, you know, you need to have 3 servings of nuts and 4 servings of protein. I mean, it just, sure, it goes there.
No, it doesn't. I don't think it needs, honestly, to be that scientific, you know. I mean, but again, there are the people out there that like to measure everything and have it that scientific. For me, you'll never get me doing that. And I was just thinking, because you're talking about, you know, high-level athletes, and I actually, a friend of mine who won the bronze medal at the Olympics in swimming, we went out a few months ago, and she was, when you're talking about, I was shocked that she was eating and drinking this, because she had a meet the next day. But she was eating, if I recall, chips, hot dogs, and drinking beer. And I was like, And it was just strange to see because I was like, I was surprised that she would, especially when she had a meet the next day, which she ended up winning. But, you know, she's got so much natural talent. You know, after going to the Olympics, just doing a local meet probably was nothing for her. And then a few years back, one of my ex-boyfriends that was a pro triathlete, I'd gone and watched him do some of the Ironmans and stuff. And I remember what he would eat, and I'm just like, oh, my God, all he's eating is just junk. You know, he didn't drink. He wasn't a drinker or drank very, very little. But the stuff he was eating was just, it was more like calories in, calories, you know, calories in, calories out versus like really. So, but, you know, he'd come out in top. He'd come out, you know, in the top 5 or 10 or whatever. So
yeah.
I think it's all based on the body, based on the person, based on the natural talent, you know.
Well, I think there was even, I heard a story one time from a local college here that he had a pro athlete that
mm-hmm.
his stomach actually got really upset with, like, spinach or something like this, where if you were told ever to eat a green food, eat spinach, you know, it's got all these protein, all this and that, you know, all this kind of stuff, and here it was causing his stomach to get upset. So here he's going with the natural movement, if you will, but yet
mm-hmm.
it doesn't work
mm-hmm.
for him. And I think that's what this is.
Well, it
overall.
Depends. If he's eating a diet that has, because spinach has quite a bit of fiber, and was it raw or was it cooked? Because if it's raw, then it's harder to digest. Your body can't digest fiber. So that's why, like, when they, you know, have to talk about diets and stuff like that, they kind of essentially say that high-fiber foods are calories that don't count because your body doesn't process it. And that's why it's used, you know, to naturally help you clean out yourself. So it could be the fact if he didn't eat, like, a lot of foods high in fiber, then his body's, it's, you know, he's going to have that kind of reaction because his body's not used to processing food like that. Rather, if he was eating a lot of, you know, whole grains and, you know, fruits and vegetables and stuff that like that that are higher in fiber, then his body gets acclimated. So,
yeah. And if
we're
looking,
for me,
yeah,
I mean, that's all, you know, that's all I eat.
See, that's what you think about it, is that so much of this world of nutrition needs to be tested and needs to be, you know, on a regular, everyday basis, rather than something that you're just doing on a particular day, that you're going to change your way of pattern of eating for one day is magically going to make you perform at a higher level. It really is.
What happened to the days of caveman? I mean, they ate nutritious. They didn't have a problem with weight. They were active every day. And now we have, and I see it living in Europe and living in the States. It's like, I think the U.S. is the most obese country, yet we have low-fat, fat-free, gluten-free, sugar-free, low cholesterol, you know, you can go on down the list. You don't get that stuff here in Europe. And it's just like, you don't see a lot of people here with weight problems either. And it's just like, I think the more scientific you try to make stuff and the more complicated you try to make stuff, the less it works.
Well, do you think that, and
just
this is just a question that you bring up, is that do you feel that the quality of the food supply in Europe is
mm-hmm.
of higher quality, and I already know the answer to this question.
Of course,
because
they don't use preservatives here. And also
and
the kids here, like when I see my friends' kids, you know what they snack on? You'll never see. You'll never open the cupboard and have Oreos or Ding Dongs or Doritos. But what you see them snacking on is always fruit. That's their snack, fruit or yogurt.
Now, do they actually go to the market
they'd be
every
like,
day,
yeah.
or do you –
there's a fresh market right across the street from me that has fresh produce and fresh meats.
And then?
And butcher.
Interesting. So it's way different than the United States where we try to go to the grocery store once a week, all buy it in a bag,
yep.
and then.
Yeah,
and then,
no. No, I mean, it's, you know, I mean, some places might, but where I live, there's a fresh market that has fresh, you know, cheeses and fruits and vegetables and meats, breads, of course, bread.
But we all know where you live, and we all wish we could live where you live.
All I can say is, home sweet home. I'm so happy to be home. Happy.
For all you people that don't know, she actually lives in the French Riviera, which
I got to turn my French back on.
Huh?
Bonjour,
anyway.
Bonsoir.
Yes, exactly. All right. So we will let you go, Tricia. Thank you for coming on the show today.
Sure.
For anybody that would like to get a hold of Tricia directly, it's TrishaO'Hara.com. And or you can get in touch with us here at the McCarthy Project. Thank you very much, Tricia, for coming on the show today. We look forward to talking to you again next week.
Yep, have a great week.
All right, we are back. Hopefully you enjoyed that time with Tricia. And there's so many different pieces to the puzzle that I was just sitting there thinking as I'm listening to the interview is that there's so many different pieces. I am going to do my best to kind of give a basic philosophy today of, okay, how can we start down the path to elite performance and not be throwing ourselves into the ditch? And so one of the things that I'm going to kind of set up here first is a quality food source. And what we mean by a quality food source is a non-GMO, organically grown food item. And like later in the show, when Ricky Keene comes on, she'll be mentioning about organics and GMO and all that kind of stuff. And she feels that the data is not sufficient enough to say, okay, this needs to be involved. This needs to be involved in the decision. The thing that she mentions is something called food politics. And the reason why there is not a lot of information is because the companies that are making the food are not funding the research, which may or may not be a good thing. But if the companies are funding it, more times than not, they will find the result that I shouldn't say more times than not. Sometimes the major companies get what they want out of the research. So there are studies out there that show that GMO food or a genetically modified fish, or I think that's the big recent one, is the genetically modified salmon. And we've done a post on the past about the salmon, about how it's twice as big, it grows fast, and it's actually sterile, and you can put it in the food supply, and it doesn't mess with it. But they're all finding out that these things are false. And we'll be putting all the different articles to connect to this story, in the sense that this genetically modified organism is actually going to be potentially contaminating the food supply and the ecosystem. And that is wrong, because if everything changes, it's not what it was intended to be. We don't know what the results at the cellular level come about in our bodies. And that is where all the allergies and all the different diseases and all that kind of stuff become so prevalent, is because these chemicals and these food items that modify who we are, that are modified, are wreaking havoc on our body. And so I'm going to be posting on our website, and I'm not going to take the time to go through this all, but GMO feed turns pig stomachs to mush. Shocking photos reveal severe damage caused by GM soy and corn. Again, this is an example of that it breaks your body down. Number two, GM salmon will breed with trout and permanently harm the ecosystem. Again, changing what we are going about, what we're living in life. China destroys multiple shipments of GM corn from the U.S. Now, I have a question for you. There's also been talk of Japan halting shipments of U.S. Commodities. And why are they doing that? If it was always so good for us, if these processed foods and these genetically modified fish and turkeys, I mean, it goes on and on and on. If we keep manipulating the food supply, we don't know what the results are, but other countries do. And that comes back to exactly what Tricia was talking about. In Europe, the quality of the food sources are tremendously better. They have a local fresh fruit, fresh vegetables meat market right across the street, just like she mentioned. In America, we go to the grocery store and we buy all of our stuff for a week, and then it stays for 3 or 4 weeks sometimes in our pantry, and then we eat it. Again, that'll kind of give you an idea of what's happening. Now, another article as well. fish farming killing off native species. Boycott farmed salmon before it's too late. Well, that's a little bit more onto the politics side. But again, it's affecting how at a cellular level in our bodies, it's changing from what regular food really is all about. So when we talk about it, the first and most important piece is genetically a non-GMO food with organically grown would be the best scenario. Now, the problem that you're going to come back and say, well, there's some things that are related to that is that saves it costs a lot of money. It's very difficult, but we're going to get into that after our time with Ricky. So with that, we're going to a quick break, and we will be back with Ricky Keene, and we'll be talking about food politics, supplementation, timing, and all those other kind of things.
Five Star Basketball, the leader in basketball instruction and camps, endorsed by Michael Jordan, Dick Vitale, and Hubie Brown, and where the teaching never stops. Five Star Basketball Minnesota will be hosting a one-day instructional camp on May 18th from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. and will be hosted by Five Star, The McCarthy Project, and Grassroots Hoops. For more information on the camp, visit themccarthyproject.com/5-star. XL Athlete is the leading provider of online strength and conditioning and speed development camps. For more information on their training programs and speed development camps, visit xlathlete.com.
All right, we are back. This is Stephen McCarthy from the McCarthy Project, and we have been discussing sports nutrition. And one of the great things about sports nutrition is we're looking at it from an elite performance standpoint. And so when you look at it from an elite performance standpoint, you need to look at things at a cellular level. What is the effect at the cellular level, not just what seems to be a good choice? And one of the great things I've learned over the recent past is that I have a friend of mine, Cal Dietz, from the University of Minnesota, that we've talked numerous times about how training affects the body at a cellular level. And that is what you need to be concerned about, not whether the marketing hype, not whether everybody else is doing it. There's so many different ways to get confused, and you need to be paying attention at a level that you can't see. And that is the piece of the puzzle that I think is hardest for young people, for sure, but for adults, too, is that they may have been taught a certain way. They may have done it a certain way. And the idea that I'm proposing, oh, it's just not that big a deal. You can eat the processed food. It's not that bad. But I'm saying to you is that if you take the time to tie this together and then flip it up into the 3D position, is that there is an attack on our food sources that causes the attack to go to us, which causes our decrease in performance, which causes our diseases and allergies. And there's so many different things going down. If you take the time to look at this information, research what I'm saying, you will see that just simply changing from a tomato that's genetically modified and non-organic to a real live tomato that was intended to be a tomato that's grown organic, you can eat the same thing. And then you would essentially not be changing your diet at all, but you would be taking one giant step forward for elite performance. Now, another thing, too, and I'm going to put up another study as well on the amount of nutrition or nutrient density in genetically modified foods and non-GMO foods. There is research that actually shows that in a lot of times it's much higher than this, but might be only one nutrient in the genetically modified tomato. In a regular non-GMO tomato, it might have four nutrients, just for the sake of our discussion today. So when it says that you can, the food pyramid might say, you need to eat 2,000 calories, and that is the diet that you need to stick within to in order to maintain your diet or accomplish your goals. Maybe it might be 3,000, maybe 4,000, whatever the number is, it doesn't, for this discussion, it's not important. But what you'll see is that you'd actually have to eat four times as much food to get the same nutrients than just the one tomato that's non-GMO. So counting calories in this day and age actually kind of gets thrown out the window. Because how could you count calories? If you have to have four times as much food, then you're going to be at 8,000 calories if you say 2,000 is your goal. How in the world are you going to be able to do that and maintain your performance, and you're adding in all these other different genetically modified organisms to your body? It just does not work. That common sense, okay, if it's not as nutrient dense, then I've got to do something different, but I can't do that because I'll blow up and add 50 pounds just because I eat so much. So that's the question I have for you, is that if you look at the time to say, okay, first of all, the counting the calories and the nutrient density, the idea that it actually does start to shut down your stomach and your gut health, there's a whole bunch of information I'll get to in a little bit on that. And then there's also a study from France on the use of genetically modified corn that it actually causes tumors and things of that nature. And so you need to really look at this information and say, okay, and not look at it and say, oh, that's just a bunch of hype and all. Take a solid, logical approach. I think an unemotional approach to say, look at it and just say, you know what, that makes sense to me. We base everything else off of these studies. Why can't we base this? Only because it's different? Well, sure. But if you're different and you're right, you're going to move your son or your daughter way far in advance. And all you're going to do is eat a different tomato. So with that, we are going to go over to Ricky Keene. Now, Ricky is going to talk initially just about her background and some initial information. But we're going to get into timing, and we're going to get into some food politics and genetically modified organisms. It's actually based into three segments. So the first segment is going to be her history and a little bit of background on who she works with. She is a very, very well-connected dietitian. She lives in Alaska. She actually works with Tom Shaw and FRS. So we'll be talking about that. That's another piece, too, is do you want to use some sort of supplementation? So with that being said, here is the first part of that interview with Ricky Keene. Well, good afternoon. This is Stephen McCarthy from the McCarthy Project. And we are joined today by Ricky Keene. I am really looking forward to this conversation because I think in just talking with Ricky a little bit, she has a fantastic idea of balance in nutrition. And just to kind of give you an idea of kind of who Ricky is and what she's done, she is currently one of the scientific advisors for FRS. She's a registered dietitian. She's board certified in sport dietetics and currently is in private practice in Alaska, which is amazing when you think about it. How are you doing today, Ricky?
I'm doing great. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Well, today, with your kind of background, the subject is pretty obvious, sports nutrition. But before we go into talking about that area, give us a little bit of background on how you came into the industry. I know you've got a really cool story about how you ended up being born and raised in Florida and ended up in Alaska.
Yeah, it's quite a commute. I combined degrees in nutrition and exercise science, so they nicely overlap because I do about 75% of my work is nutrition or nutrition coaching in a sense. And 25% is in the exercise physiology or exercise science area because I basically at the University of Alaska, I teach a sports nutrition course as well as the assistant coordinator for our exercise physiology lab. So there I'm able to work with our athletes either in the community or in the field, not just the lab, doing lactate testing, metabolic testing, body composition, hydration. So I can get a lot of data to help further the nutrition piece and put all the you know, it's a puzzle in a sense, put that together. So also the team dietitian for the University of Alaska, so work with the team athletes. Then I do commute from the university. I do commute down to Orlando off and on through the year working with Coach Shaw. Coach Tom Shaw is a pretty well-known speed and conditioning coach. Located at the ESPN Wide World of Sports. There's a variety of athletes. The primary athletes that we have are NFL. So we have a lot of the NFL guys come as soon as season's over. They're showing up and last through OTAs, and they come back and forth as well through the year. Olympic athletes as well. So between high school, NCAA, and pro and Olympic are the athletes that I work with. And then I'm a consultant for the sports medicine department at Florida Hospital. So it all kind of blends together. It's all multiple bosses.
I just think that's fascinating.
I like many bosses, but it all actually just gels really well. So, and then the FRS is kind of unique because not all sports dietitians, very few, are connected to an actual product. Because we're very science-based profession. Sports dietitians are basically the ones with the credentials that we have are going to be the ones employed by your NCAA schools, your big Division I schools, Alabama, LSU, Florida State, UCLA. The pro teams that are out there, they're going to be the ones hiring the sports dietitians, your Major League Baseball, NHL, NFL, so on, Olympic training centers. And then the military now has really gotten into having sports, they call it performance dietitians or tactical dietitians for their special ops. So actually Navy SEALs have sports dietitians, so it's pretty cool. But I think nutrition is definitely coming around. I think it's been underutilized for quite a while. So I've been in it long enough to know that there was hardly any jobs, 20 years ago in my field, and now it's popping up all over. So it's been good.
So it really is a fascinating world when you get down to the world of nutrition, and let's do this. Before we get too much into some specific subjects, I'd like to talk a little bit about the youth athlete because, it's all cool sometimes to work with NFL guys or, Major League Baseball, whatever it may be. But sometimes it's almost like, well, those guys got lots of money. They're able to pay you lots of money to do what you do. But how does that apply to me as a Johnny, a 12-year-old, and I want to go to McDonald's and Dairy Queen 17 times a week? what kind of things can I do to elevate my performance?
Well, you can definitely still find a sports dietitian in your local area, but just basically the concepts that I still utilize with these pro and Olympic athletes are the same concepts, for the most part I'm going to utilize with 12-year-old Johnny, is you need to get that foundation, and start to realize what food can do for you and real food at that. And there are some studies out there to even back that up. Blueberries, beets, actually. 12-year-old Johnny's probably not going to like beets, but we can work on other foods there. But, understanding that food is meant to have function, and I think Hippocrates said it years and years ago, let food be your medicine. And I think it's the same concept if you can get instill into the youth that food is performance. And food is recovery. So we talk about food, we're talking about, really colorful fruits and vegetables that have those antioxidants, those pigments in them, and healthy fats, have tuna fish sandwich and not a Big Mac. Even if the calories were equal, they are not the same in their reaction in the body. So you're looking at something that's going to be pro-inflammatory with so many calories, or anti-inflammatory and help your recovery. It's still food, but there's a huge difference in the nutrient composition of those foods. So it's really key to start early. So by the time they do get pro or in college level, it's going to make it a lot easier for that sports dietitian to teach them. So I think we should start extremely early. And kids nowadays there's soccer is practically year-round. Hockey, I know, is year-round up here in Alaska. So they start really young, and I think it's really a key to really have them understand they should be eating the same, throughout their sport life. And then teaching them about hydration as well is really key, because a lot of the youth, they don't sweat the same as adults. They're not quite there yet with puberty. And so keeping on them and staying hydrated is a real key as well. And I always, the kids always kind of giggle when I do classes with the young ones, is how do you know if you're hydrated enough? And it's really just looking at the color of your pee. And so if they can follow that, and I actually tell them not to have it completely clear. I actually want it to look like it's lemonade, because when it's completely clear, then they've actually diluted their electrolytes. So,
there is a ditch on both ends too, you know, and that's one thing that I don't think many people realize, is there's a ditch on the other side of drinking too much as well. You know,
exactly. Yeah, Tim Noakes is really big on proponent of that, to make sure that you're possibly not, you know, over drinking water or any fluid in general to dilute your electrolyte content. So it's probably, it's not as common to do that as it is to go into a practice or a game or an event dehydrated. I would say 50% of athletes do that already. So we kind of more focus on the dehydration, but absolutely not to be overzealous with fluids as well. So when it, you know, it's definitely something to pay attention to. I have a lot of my athletes, something really easy to do is a sweat rate, and that's weighing yourself before and after an event or practice, especially in the heat, and finding out how much you've lost. So that's a real key too. And the other thing is what are they drinking? And if they're, you know, I see a lot of, even in middle school, you know, they're drinking these 16, 24 ounce energy drinks, and it's a load of caffeine for one, and it's not the best hydrating fluid out there as well, especially in the heat with all that caffeine, and then you're looking at a high heart rate, you know, so it's not the best combination.
So when you mention the energy, hold on, I would like to go back to just one thing, because I think sometimes, you know, energy drink is a very general term. Could you be a little bit more specific because under the word energy drink, you could have Gatorade, you could have Monster, and you could have Muscle Milk, all have variations of energy drinks, if you will.
Right.
Could you be a little bit more specific of what you mean by the ones that are causing the difficulty, if you will?
An energy drink, for a general term, is usually falling into the Rockstar, to the Monster, to the NOS, to the, you know, five hour, even the shots, which can even be more, you know, a concern to me, because you can put down a couple shots pretty easy. So that would fall into the energy that's going to contain a pretty good high dose of caffeine. And keep in mind that, you know, there are regulations for caffeine for soda. So for a 12-ounce soda, FDA says you cannot have any more than 71 milligrams of caffeine. There is no such regulation for, you know, per se energy drinks. So that's a concern as well. So that would fall in, you know, to the taurine and the mixture of that proprietary blend of ingredients that we really don't know a whole heck of a lot, except what the marketing people tell us, that it's, you know, the best thing ever. Then the sports drinks. I would consider that versus the energy, use the word sports drinks for things like Gatorade, Powerade, you know, Osmo is actually a newer sports drink that I'm extremely liking. It's a little newer on the market. It's not as sweetened up. In regards to the sugar load, good electrolyte content. So the things that are going to have some fuel to them, some sugar, as well as electrolytes, would be your sports drink. Your protein, your recovery, even your pre-workout, in a sense, with protein would be more of your Muscle Milk concept. So that has a different role. I think it's an important role, but it would be different in regards to energy or sports, in regards to Muscle Milk. So if that helps.
All right. Yeah, absolutely. All right, we're going to go to a quick break, and we're going to come back on the other side, and we're going to talk more about recovery and the sleep aspect. You mentioned that earlier. And really going to kind of delve down into how do you actually promote a high-level elite performance with food. So with that, we'll be back to talk right after the break.
Alrighty, so there you go. There are some basics, again, coming out of this subject of sports nutrition from Ricky Keene. And one of the big things that I'm just getting the feeling as I'm going through today is that this really is a very, very large subject to talk about. There are so many different variables. If you would like to talk more, get in touch with us at themccarthyproject.com. I am going to be linking all the articles that or studies that I'm mentioning in today's show. I shouldn't say all, the majority of them. If I forget one, please just send me an email at McCarthy@themccarthyproject.com, and I will send out to you or post a link, whichever is easiest. So the big thing that I think coming out of that first initial piece is, one, is hydration. We talked a little about energy drinks, sports drinks, that different aspect. But I'm going to go one step further and say, okay, we need to have what they call a clean water source. Now, what does that mean, a clean water source? Well, you just go to your faucet and then you use the water there. That's been certified as healthy for me. Well, true, it has been certified. But there are things in the water, more times than not, either some minerals, some chemicals, but most importantly, fluoride is in there. And they say, well, that's better for your teeth and all those types of things, but really it is not. It is probably one of the most destructive components or chemicals that you can put in your body. And so we're going to be talking about that aspect, but also I think we're going to connect up to another article that talks about the dirtiness of water and some information related to that, like how when you go out to a restaurant and you get the ice, that the ice is made out of water that's worse than that's in your toilet. You know, and I think that's it's a bold statement, but after you take a look at the information, you say, well, that makes sense to me. So how do you control your water sources to the point that you are able to be semi-assured that the chemicals are not in there or the fluoride is not in there? And that's where Berkey comes in. We carry the Berkey water filters, but they are most intended with cleaning up your water sources and drinking water and not the chemicals. So from that standpoint, so now we're going to go down the list. So we've got hydration, which we talked about with Ricky Keene. There are some other supplementation pieces that we'll be talking in the next segment as well. But that's another piece of the puzzle related to supplementation, is that there is no way in our current diet, with the limitations that we have, that we're able to fill all the cracks. You must fill the cracks in with some sort of supplementation. Does that mean it's a chemical-based? Does that mean it's a non-chemical-based or a natural type product? I've moved over into some teas and stuff like that. I know that's very difficult for young kids. But it's something that you just need to kind of pull back and say, okay, I'm going to go after a quality food sources. I make sure my water is clean. And then we're going to move over into recovery and sleep. And I think that, how does that happen with the nutrition? I think you'll see how it actually is the part of the body that promotes recovery. Because we talked about earlier, how do you promote recovery? Well, you have recovery snacks, you have recovery sleep, not recovery sleep, but sleep that does sort of allow your body to release the hormones and the growth hormone and all that kind of stuff that allows your body to recover and regenerate and build the muscle back so that the work that you did has a benefit. And so she talked about that as well. So we're going to go off into the second segment of that interview with Ricky Keene. And she's going to be talking about recovery and sleep. All right, we're back. This is Stephen McCarthy from the McCarthy Project, and I have Ricky Keene on the show today talking about nutrition. And we have covered sleep, recovery, We've talked about some basics, some rules of thumb. But one of the big areas, and Ricky mentioned it right at the end of the last segment, was GMO and food labeling and processed foods and, this whole world of is it really food or is it not food, you know what I mean? And so what I've asked Ricky to come back and just talk a little bit about it is kind of give us an overview, because it is a subject that probably could take an hour in itself, when you get to be moving on to the real depth of it. But Ricky, what are kind of your thoughts related to that labeling or the GMO or processed food question?
Well, it's definitely a hot topic right now, and I think what we have to think of is because we don't know, and I think hopefully this push to have it labeled for us to be able to make our own decision whether we're going to purchase something or put something into our body that's GMO or non-GMO, I think we need to have that option. Right now we don't. There are some products that are labeled. There's just no real defined ruling on that currently. So hopefully that will be mandated for us to be able to make a good choice. But, I mean, I think that it just makes common sense and good judgment to be able to put something into your body because, we are what we eat or drink. And to be able to put something in that's either nutritionally deficient but can look good on paper, meaning it looks good on the label, I would want to know, what was the whole process from farm to table? What am I putting in, whether it's been genetically modified or not? I think I should have that option. I try to teach the athletes, especially when I can take some of the NFL guys grocery shopping, as to really kind of we do the whole perimeter shopping of the store, so we try to get most of your primary fruits and vegetables, but I also try to teach them in regards to, say, farmed salmon versus wild salmon. Those kind of things make a huge difference, and we know that nutritionally they can say they have enough, of the omega-3s, but, there's other stuff in there that we're not quite sure about with the farmed meats, as well as the vitamin D content is way lower in farmed. And there is some data on that. Now that we have some conclusive information or more solid, but unfortunately we don't have a whole lot of scientific data to be able to support, say, hey, you have to have non-GMO. But I think that falls into food politics, and right now we just don't, we have to kind of base it on, common sense. It makes sense to go towards the non-GMO products. I also follow the Dirty Dozen. I don't know if you've heard of
that.
Yeah,
I've actually had that before, yes. So if you could just refresh our listeners' memory and my memory,
okay.
If you will, what are the Dirty Dozen?
So each year there's a group that gets together and they basically measure the pesticide content of produce. I think there's usually 50 or 60 different produce items. And the Dirty Dozen are the top 12 produce items. Say, for example, you need to buy organic apples when it comes down to it because they're going to have the most pesticides on them. So there's a list. You can easily Google it. Environmental Protection Agency. But you can just Google the Dirty Dozen of produce, and it will come up. I believe every June they come out with a new list, and it doesn't change too much, but it's very interesting. They also give you the Clean 15. So those are a lot of your produce items that have maybe bananas, maybe pineapple, something that typically has a covering on it that you're not going to eat. So it's been protected by all the pesticides that get to it. But I think that is very worth a little bit of extra money because you kind of invest now in your health so it can pay off, whether it's in performance or pay off in your health from 10, 20, 30 years from now, when the chronic type conditions can appear. And then organic. you know, I'm very big on the grass-fed and the organic type meats. Of course, we're really big up here on moose. You know, game wild meat has an excellent profile in iron. You know, there's taking that to the next level is definitely try to get all your fruits and vegetables in possible, but also try to go ahead and follow, you know, things like the Dirty Dozen and those organic produce items. Might as well, you know, you are what you eat, so might as well put the best things you can in your system.
Yes, I have one particular question. Once you get into this world of kind of getting off the processed food supply, then you move over, and there's the next big kind of discussion is the plant-based versus protein-based, you know, or red meat-based, whatever you want to call it. What are you, and you mentioned you eat a lot of moose, and a lot of, I mean, obviously that's red meat. Do you think somebody can go either way with that one? Do you think one's right or wrong, or is it, again, a preference or an individual thing?
I think there's athletes out there that have done really well on a plant-based diet. I think there's athletes also that are on animal products. I think the key there with the animal products is what are they eating in regards to amount. You know, I think there is an excess on the range of animal products, and I think that's what we're seeing in the general public. And that's what we're seeing in regards to heart disease and inflammation and those kind of things. Is there's, you know, a 16-ounce steak is not what we're really considering a serving of meat. And I think that gets very common with the American public. So I think it's the excess or excess dairy. You know, some of the spins out there that are against dairy, we got to look at, like, well, how much is too much? So I'm okay with when taking, you know, appropriate amount of animal-based products in. Whey protein, there is a lot of great science in whey protein. So, you know, it has the superstar amino acid in it, leucine, that we know just totally kickstarts the protein synthesis of the muscle. We can't debate that. So I think it's very individual, and I think that's where medicine, I think that's where nutrition is going, is having that profile of, well, what works best for you. At some point, we'll get like a genetic profile and say, yes, you know, a high-fiber diet or a high-protein diet or low-carb diet or even a high-fat diet. There's even going into the ketotic state for some athletes. That can work for them. So I think until we know that, there can be some trial and error out there. But I think being careful of just jumping on a bandwagon of what the latest trend is, what you see on TV in regards to supplements or diets is, or what your buddy's doing, doesn't necessarily work as a whole.
Yes. All right. Ricky, well, we've come to the end of our time today. I want to thank you very much for spending the hour with us. I think it's great to hear that common sense and science can match. It doesn't have to be such a difficult process for athletes to understand. And then just to let everybody know is that if you're interested in get a hold of Ricky directly, she has a website and called fuelandfluids.com. I have trouble sometimes with those credentials, but fuelandfluids.com. And then you also have a Twitter handle of TeamsSportsRD as well. Thank you very much, Ricky, for coming on the show today.
Thank you for having me, and I hope everyone out there will continue to enjoy the sports and health tips from the McCarthy Project. So thanks for letting me talk about athletes, nutrition, and FRS.
Cool. Have a great day.
You too.
All righty, we're back. My apologies. The third portion of the interview was the portion you just listened to. And that was going to be the more organic versus GMO discussion. you know, or the non-GMO organic versus the GMO world. So, again, I think you'll get a feel for what she's mentioning is that there's studies that have not been as numerous as somebody in the scientific world would desire, but there's a reason for that, and that's called food politics. And there are many powerful companies that are suppressing information that shows that this is the food that we're being fed in the United States and in the world that is genetically modified is not good for us as people. It will harm us. It will cause our performance to decrease. It will cause our diseases and different afflictions to go up. And I will be posting that information to explain that more fully, but it just gets to the discussion of food politics, health freedom, and the ability to have real food as our what sustains us as a people and then ultimately leads to our performance as an athlete. So with that, we are going to move over back over to the original second segment of that interview, which was about sleep and recovery. So with that, we're going to do a quick break, and then we'll be back with Ricky Keene to talk about recovery and sleep.
Five Star Basketball, the leader in basketball instruction and camps, endorsed by Michael Jordan, Dick Vitale, and Hubie Brown, and where the teaching never stops. Five Star Basketball Minnesota will be hosting a one-day instructional camp on May 18th from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. and will be hosted by Five Star, The McCarthy Project, and Grassroots Hoops. For more information on the camp, visit themccarthyproject.com/5-star. XL Athlete is the leading provider of online strength and conditioning and speed development camps. For more information on their training programs and speed development camps, visit xlathlete.com.
Good afternoon. This is Stephen McCarthy from the McCarthy Project, and we have been attacking life and sports since 2001. And I am thrilled to be on the show today to be talking about the world of sports nutrition. And I think, for the most part, it has become one of the most confusing issues to the world of sports. It has been probably one of the most underutilized areas because of the suppression of information and therefore not leading to elite performance, to leading to a position where only the few survive because they were just genetically gifted, whereas there are so much potential if we were able to allow our bodies to do what it's supposed to do and not be hindered by different chemicals, different antibiotics, different genetically modified organisms, either at the seed level or at a more animal-based product like a salmon or a cow, you know, or things like this that are basically we're manipulating the food supply, we're manipulating the ecosystem for our benefit, and it is not turning out to be our benefit, it's turning out to be a hindrance. And so with that, we are going to move back over into the recovery and sleep portion because you need to allow your body to recover from the work that you're doing. And that is done either through sleep or through the proper eating, the proper timing. So with that, we're going to go back into the original second segment with Ricky Keene and talk a little bit about sleep and recovery.
Alrighty, we are back. This is Stephen McCarthy from the McCarthy Project, and we are talking about sports nutrition today. Probably one of the funnest subjects to talk about because it is probably one of the most misunderstood subject because people just assume that if they count calories, you know, and they go to McDonald's 17 times or 18 times, whatever it may be, that, well, as long as they stay under their calorie count, they're just fine. Or, you know, they can eat a whole boatload of supplements and think that because they got all the supplements that they're going to be at a high nutrition position. I think that's another ditch as well. But nonetheless, we're back with Ricky Keene, who is a scientific advisor for FRS, works with a lot of high-level athletes in the NFL, down at the ESPN Sports Complex. And we're going to be talking about two major areas. I think we'll start with one, and that's recovery as a whole. And then there are two places, under the sleep and then into the food area. Ricky, talk to us a little bit about the sleep aspect and what the current level of society, you know, thinks about sleep and where they need to go to get it fixed, I guess.
Thanks. Well, I think overall the steady state, the balance of what you're eating, the highs and lows of these big sugar loads, whether it's coming from drinks or whether it's coming from processed foods, I think that keeps the body in this constant up and down motion through the day, and then we're not able to really relax as like we should, because that's, I always tell my athletes, and it's a little easier when I'm at, you know, Disney, it kind of means a little bit more, is all the magic happens at night. And basically that's when all the training really, all the training that you did during the day, the adaptations are happening at night during your sleep. So quality of sleep is really, really important. So I think I look to make sure that the athlete is, or anyone in general, because it can be related to not having that steady state of energy, and then we're seeing that in like high insulin spikes through large meals or not very healthy, say processed high sugar meals, and we're seeing inflammation out of that. So we don't want that to be happening through the day, and then here we are not getting good quality sleep to be able to have our growth hormone and all the magic that's happening with protein building or protein synthesis inside the muscle. That happens at night. So when you're not getting that good quality sleep, you're really not getting your full training adaptation. And then, of course, nutrient timing, what you're taking, when you're taking it throughout the day. And I always have a lot, especially my athletes who are working out, depending on the season, intensely, I always have them have a recovery before they go to bed. So we have multiple recovery meals and snacks throughout the day, but at nighttime it's really, really key as well.
Now, I'm going to come back to the idea of what a recovery snack might be, but before, because I'm very curious myself, but on the other side, you sit there and say, okay, if that's where the magic happens, sleep, you know, and is there a general rule of thumb to say, okay, anything over 7 hours, anything over 9 hours, you know, is there a rule of thumb that says, you know, get this certain number or take a nap, or how does nap fit in there? You know, I mean, I know that's something in America that we would even think that a nap, well, that's for little kids.
I know, in Europe, it's just like, just a given, you know. Plus, they take longer vacations. I think they're on to something there too. There's actually there's not tons right now that I would love to have on the sleep data, but it's definitely an area that's becoming a hot topic. Baseball is using that as far as that nap concept a lot. You know, there's kind of the rule of thumb. I believe it's somewhere between either 30, 45 minutes. Or less, but you know, if you know, go too far into the sleep of a nap, your duration, then it can hinder. So there's some rules of thumb on that. So those are power naps, and they definitely can help an athlete out. Duration during the night, I think it's one key, but then how many times do they go through the REM cycles as well? But 7 to 8 hours is kind of a rule of thumb. But just like training, just like nutrition, it can be very individual. So some athletes, they may need and know that they need 9 hours. And I was just speaking to an Olympic hopeful. I was lucky to have lunch with her last week and chat with her about nutrition and sleep, and she just knows that she needs about those 8 hours. She just knows it. And her sport's pretty interesting. As a half pipe, you know, skier, and she just knows, and that's, you know, for her to get six, that would probably hinder her training, hinder her performance, and that's pretty key. So it's you know, I'm looking for foods. I'm looking for any gaps in the diet that I can assist that are going to be anti-inflammatory. They're going to speed up that recovery as quickly as I can get it. They're going to help reload the muscle, whether it be fuel like glycogen, carbs, or support the damage that occurred and making sure that we can rebuild that muscle. And the oxidative stress as well that exercise can put on and keeping that immune system supported. So I go back to, you know, the colorful fruits and vegetables, the antioxidants, your omega-3s. I'm really big on. I like whey protein. I make sure my athletes, their vitamin D level is optimal. Depending on the athlete, I may look at their ferritin. So there's a lot of gaps that we fill to really support the whole 24-hour cycle. So it kind of depends on, you know, what gaps I'm looking to fill. But some supplements do help. I like the FRS. That's why, because of the science-based evidence that we have on FRS and recovery and immune system. So it wears multiple hats. So that's going back to why I like products or food that can provide multiple benefits, not just a one-trick pony. So that's where FRS comes in as recovery, as well as depending on the time of the day, I'll use it's pre. So anti-inflammatory, antioxidant, so that's what I'm looking for. The EGCG as well, which is green tea extract that's in the product. So I'm looking for things that are going to work together as a team.
Yep.
As well. So those are, you know, it's a whole 24-hour cycle, and I think recovery is the same. So part of that sleep, which is in those 24 hours, it's all important. It's all connected. So recovery
is... Let's go back, because before we go on to the next break, because I want to come back to it, but you had mentioned a recovery snack, you know, and you put that specific title on it. What, in your mind, is a recovery snack?
It can depend on what the demand is. So what the athlete did in training, how intense was it? If you're a typical, you know, maybe a person just going to go for a 45-minute run, they have time to shower. They have time to relax. And then within the hour or two, eat a good meal. That will work. If they want to speed up the recovery, kind of get the party started, as I call it, for, you know, especially intense training, which nowadays, I mean, CrossFit, you know, there's two-a-days of multiple training, whether it's a swimmer or hockey. So a lot of people are putting out a lot of energy in their sport. Then I think try to get a recovery in as soon as possible. And that's when I'm looking for something like whey protein to basically resupply in regards to the muscle. You kind of minimize that breakdown, enhance the building back up. And the other thing is, you know, antioxidants, the fuel from carbohydrates, the banana, you know, so there's kind of a blend between those three. If it's a heavy workout or long workout, and we're looking at hydration as well. So you want to resupply with fluids and electrolyte as well.
Right, it's funny because we have to go to a quick break, and I apologize for interrupting, but what I hear you saying ultimately is it doesn't need to be a big, fancy, you know, cook of something. It could be a banana and a sports drink or something as simple as that. That becomes the recovery drink. Would you agree, or is there more? Is it a little bit more complex than that?
It depends on the athlete, but it can be as simple, especially on the youth, that, you know, it could be half a turkey sandwich. If food safety is an issue, you're going to be out there all day, and you can't bring a, you know, cooler to have that turkey sandwich in. A peanut butter and jelly, and some chocolate milk. And, you know, that would be sufficient, a banana. And then, you know, there are places for other drinks, though. Like, you know, we do use muscle milk at ESPN with Coach Shaw. it works. It works great. The guys like it. It's convenient. And so there's different places for certain things depending on the athlete. And, you know, I'll go back to why I would use FRS, because we do have a protein. It's 20 grams of whey protein isolate, so it's a good quality protein along with the antioxidants, so it's serving a function. So, yeah, there's things you can mix. That's the beauty of it, is mixing and matching the things that will work. Now, there are some products on the market that you know, overhype and don't have a function in recovery. So you just kind of have to know, you know, what you're going to be putting into your body and be knowledgeable about the ingredients. I'm pretty big on transparency on the label. So reading that label, understanding that label versus a lot of the blends that aren't so transparent in what you're getting. So.
All right. I think that's a great intro, because we're going to cover that in the next subject, or the next segment, because the labeling, is it organic, is it GMO or genetically modified, or, you know, is it a processed food, I think is a big, big hot button in the world of nutrition. So we're going to go to a quick break, and we'll be back to talk about organic, GMO, and processed food. All righty, so there's Ricky Keene, again, talking about recovery, talking about supplementation. And I think the greatest description of supplementation is that it fills in the cracks, and that's the analogy she used. Supplementation is something that you fill in the cracks when your nutrition or your food sources don't meet all your needs. One of the ones that she had mentioned is vitamin D. So, again, if you would like to get more information, we'll have Ricky Keene's contact information on our webpage, as well as Trisha O'Hara. So let's kind of recap in the last 5 or 6 minutes of the show today, is that there are some basic pieces to the puzzle that you can put in play that put you in a position to start to take advantage of the information, that information that people like Ricky have, is that you first of all need clean food sources, and eating them consistently with a certain number of calories and a certain number of, 40% of this, 20% of this, 20% of that. Now, I know that the math doesn't work out, but 40, 40, 20, or 20, 30, you know, 50 or something like that. That's where those idea of diets and registered dietitians, they all come into play, because each individual sport might have a different need. Or the other person or part we haven't talked about is that each person is different. And I think we probably talked about that in one of the segments, now that I think about it. But in this world of elite performance, each individual needs to be worked with on an individual basis. How is the training? How is the nutrition? How is the recovery? How does that affect that particular individual at a cellular level? And everybody is different. So it's hard to make general, wide-sweeping brushes on the subject of sports nutrition. But with that being said, you first of all need to get into the game and first of all get a quality food source. Then make sure you have a clean water source that, again, that doesn't have the chemicals implanted in the water, that it goes right to the – I'm just going to say a cellular level, because I'm not a doctor or a registered dietitian. They could talk about those particular pieces to the puzzle, but – with that being said, those two things, then add a supplement, then add in recovery, add in a little bit of sleep, and therefore you have a successful combination of elite performance. You're able to meet your highest potential because now you're not hindered by chemicals, so therefore your elite performance aspect comes in. Your body is not going to be beat up and beat down and basically put in a position of failure because of these chemicals at the cellular level. And lastly,
there's not that much confusion about it. I mean, I have the book, I won't name it in the book, but we've all read them, where there is so much science in it that it is so difficult to understand, we get confused. And I am going to put a little plug in for one that I feel has most accurately get to the basics. Now, they don't talk about it in the same way that we're talking about it, but it is The Paleo Diet for Athletes by Lauren Cordain and Joe Friel. They talk about, they even go even further to say, okay, how do you clean up your water source? If you're in an old house and you have metal pipes, do not drink the water. You have to, again, come back to a filter. And so these are the things that I think that if you get down to it, and you really get down to it, you realize that if you take a step back, look at the 30,000-foot view, look at the end game is that the food sources and the water sources are dirty. You have to make sure that they're clean. At that point, you're going to be far and away better. And we haven't even talked about what to eat, you know, as far as like at that registered dietitian level, you know, timing, all those. I mean, those are important, but they become the secondary portion to it. If you can get into this game, you'll be ahead. We've had other experts on the show that talk about how non-GMO organic food is a competitive advantage for pro athletes. Can you imagine what it would be for a young person as they're growing and they're coming through those formative years when they need all these nutrients to grow? How much further in advance you would be if you simply changed the source of your food, not change what you're eating, change the source of your food. Amazing stuff. So with that, if you have any questions related to the show today, please visit us at themccarthyproject.com. We will have the show notes with all the studies and the different links to all the different books. Again, my email address is mccarthy@themccarthyproject.com. I would look forward to continuing the discussion. If you have some questions, if you'd like to challenge me, I'm open-minded. I really do want this to be about truth. And that gets back to our Thistle song. A lot of people may not like that song off the shoot, but I'm telling you, we're ready. We got our war clothes on, and we're not going to change. You may not like me. You may not think that I'm right, but I'm going to be basing things on truth. And if you come back and say, hey, this is not right, please just email me. We discuss it, we'll come down to it, and we'll agree to disagree. But at least we have a discussion. And that is what I'm looking for in this show, is to have a discussion related to sports nutrition. And it can be done, and you can gain a competitive advantage simply by changing the couple things that we talked about. Have a great day. We will talk to you on Friday, again, with Sean Goodzell, and we'll be talking about focus.
You have been listening to The McCarthy Project, and remember to always attack life and sport.